A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking about the not-so-free state of Massachusetts, where Governor Maura Healey has signed that emergency preamble to a bill she originally signed 2 months ago, which means that Chapter 135, also known as the Devil's Snare, also known as the Lawful Citizens Imprisonment Act, according to the Gun Owners Action League, is now officially in effect. Even though the state and many of the agencies not anywhere close to being prepared to enforce this law, there are all kinds of new edicts for gun owners, for gun sellers, for law enforcement, and nobody seems to really know what exactly they're supposed to do now that all of these laws are officially in effect. So we're going to talk with Toby Leary. He is a gun owner, as well as a gun store owner, Cape Gun Works in Hyannis, Massachusetts. He is also leading the Civil Rights Coalition, which is seeking to undo Chapter 135 via a voter referendum. And in fact, it was that signature gathering process that led to Governor Maura Healey signing this emergency preamble, which puts the law into effect immediately and stops Second Amendment advocates like Leary and other gun owners from putting this law on hold. If they had turned in, I think it was 47,000 and some odd signatures to the Secretary of State's office, then Chapter 135 would have been suspended until voters had a chance to weigh in on the 2026 ballot. But now that Governor Healey has retroactively declared this to be an emergency piece of legislation, the law will be enforced and it will be in place, even though voters still have the opportunity to repeal it 2 years from now. That's the emergency, right? Not a gun violence emergency, not a surge in violent crime. No, the emergency was that this law was going to be put on hold for 2 years. And rather than do that, Maura Healey instead decided to move up the effective date, causing all kinds of concerns and, frankly, constitutional issues. So let's get into this with Toby Leary, head of the Civil Rights Coalition, and the owner of Cape Gunworks in Hyannis, Massachusetts. We'll talk with Toby about the next steps, about what's going on at his gun store today. What can he sell? He might not even know the answer to that question, but let's get started. Take a look and a listen. Toby, thanks for joining me on what I imagine is a very crazy and chaotic day for you. I really do appreciate you carving out a few minutes.
My pleasure. I'm happy to do it. And thank you for all the great work you do, Cam, and shining the light of truth in these dark places of the country where they need to be.
Hey, listen, you want to talk about hard work, man. Thank you for everything that you're doing. All of these volunteers are doing with the Civil Rights Coalition, collecting these signatures. And I want to get into the governor's move here. But let me just ask, I mean, now that she has signed this emergency preamble, Chapter 135 is officially in effect. What can you sell at Cape Gunworks today, Toby? What are you allowed to sell right now?
Well, surprisingly enough, and I knew this was going to happen, that they sent a memo yesterday and said, don't worry about it. You can continue to sell any of the rifles and shotguns that you were allowed to sell before. As long as it doesn't violate any other statute, you can go ahead and violate this statute. We're going to let you do that until we get our act together, until we get the roster created, until we get the Firearms Control Advisory Board seated, until we work out what this all looks like. Go ahead and sell some guns. Don't worry about it. So that proves this wasn't an emergency. This wasn't a crisis. They're telling us we can continue to sell the guns that she found 70 days after signing this law to all of a sudden be such a threat that she had to sign an emergency preamble 70 days later. So it doesn't make any sense. It really does. I'm joking around, but it's really not that funny. I'm saying welcome to the state of confusion. I mean, Massachusetts, because really that's what it is. I literally just had to go to a local police department who was refusing to take applications for the license to carry because of the emergency preamble that she signed yesterday. And I said, no, guys, like, you have to take these. People still need to get their license to carry. And the state gave themselves an extra 18 months to develop the curriculum, the you know, pass-fail grade, the state police requirements, the live fire training requirements, all this stuff. They got 18 months to do this. But yet here we are today, and we've been given very little guidance on what this looks like and how does it play out? And what about the 18 to 20 year olds that are in possession of a semi-automatic shotgun that they legally and lawfully bought with their firearms ID card? Today, they're a felon in the eyes of the state. What about the FID holders that own a semi-automatic shotgun or rifle? They're felons in the eyes of the state. And meanwhile, I don't take great comfort in the fact that the state is giving me but one sentence of guidance saying dealers can continue to sell rifles and shotguns so long as they don't violate any other provision of the law. This provision is okay to violate, according to us. So they're acting like dictatorial tyrants, Cam. That's really what it comes down to. The rules don't apply to them.
Yeah.
The rules apply to us. And we'll tell you which rules you've got to follow and which ones you don't.
This is crazy. I mean, this is absolutely crazy because, as you say, you know, the entire reason, supposedly, why Maura Healey signed this emergency preamble, putting Chapter 135 into effect immediately, is because there was an emergency that had to be dealt with. Right. So right. So what is the emergency? If you can continue to sell the same firearms that you could sell yesterday, you know, and as you say, all that has been created now is this massive confusion. I mean, you talk about the licensing confusion, but you know, there's a provision in Chapter 135, as you well know, that the common carriers like FedEx, UPS, now have to have basically a locked compartment to store firearms and ammunition in when they're transporting them to stores like yours. Did they have to comply with that law, or have they been given a pass for an undefined period of time? I mean, this is insane, yeah. Toby. And where do they have the authority to say, okay, you don't have to follow this section of the law, even though it's now enforced?
I don't know. I guess, you know, what if you read into the nuance of this law, the Firearms Control Advisory Board that they have yet to see is going to have unilateral power. In fact, the Secretary of the Executive Office of Public Safety has unilateral power to act of their own initiative to add or take away guns from the list that has yet to be created.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why they're bothering to seat a Firearms Control Advisory Board. And by the way, in the process of doing this, they're unseating the Gun Control Advisory Board that's already assembled, which has stakeholders from the gun industry. It has members of Gun Owners Action League. It has Second Amendment lawyers. It has other stakeholders, right? In the new Firearms Control Advisory Board, there's none of that. It's all appointees by the Secretary of the Commonwealth, by the Attorney General, by the governor, by the legislators. This is all going to be a hostile group of people to legal and lawful gun ownership in the state of Massachusetts. And they haven't even seated them. And I guess they're acting on the fact that the legislature has given them universal powers to say what gun can and can't be sold in the state, and with or without a list, apparently. It's madness. It really is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and as you know, I mean, Chapter 135 doesn't just say, okay, well now, you know, all rifle shotguns and handguns are considered firearms. So now they've got to be on this roster. You and other FFLs, you have a ton of new reporting requirements. You have a ton of new record keeping requirements. Are you exempt from those provisions now, or are you expected to comply with all of these new requirements that you haven't been trained on? Because the training for that section of the law has been pushed back another 18 months. So are you expected to comply with these laws, even though you've not been told how to do so, even though some of these forms may not even be available for you yet?
It's the state of confusion continues because, you know, I consider myself one of the more well-versed people of the nuance to this law. And I have people calling me all day long, like, what do we do? What do we do? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, that's the thing that this has created. And, you know, you get back to the Emergency Powers Act that she, or the emergency preamble that she has the power or authority apparently to do. But if you look at what gives her those rights, it's for immediate emergent conditions, like peace, safety, and then of public convenience. That's really the key there, because that's the catch-all that they always use, is it's for the public convenience. But as we just explained, there's nothing convenient about this to the public. It creates a whole litany of ticking time bombs waiting to blow up in our face as we try to comply with the law or try to conduct business. All the unknowns, all the lack of guidance, all the basically traps that have been set along the way that you could easily run afoul of are just out there waiting to explode in our face.
Yeah.
And nobody knows really. Even the guidance that they're sending is so pitiful in its the way it's written and its frequently asked questions. It contradicts itself. And at the end of the day, they always give themselves wide and broad latitude to comply and implement the law, at the same time requiring us to comply with it immediately, whatever that is. And we don't even know.
And as you brought up the local licensing authority that was not accepting applications. Did you convince them, by the way, that they needed to start or keep taking in these applications?
I did. And this wasn't like one of the smaller police departments. This is one of the larger police departments. They got no guidance from the state. The two memos that I got from Lawyer and from Jim Wallace at Gun Owners Action League, I had never been sent. I'm one of the biggest gun stores in the state. I never got that from EOPS. I never got it from any licensing authority or anything like that. And the local licensing authority hasn't been given it either. They're one of the bigger police departments in New England, in Massachusetts. And if the state's not even disseminating the information to the bigger players and stakeholders, how do we expect the average guy on the street or girl on the street to figure this all out and comply with it?
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, that's my concern, is that, you know, the state can say, all right, Toby, you can keep selling these guns until we tell you you can't. But I mean, what happens if there's some overzealous chief out there who says, you know what, I don't think you are allowed to sell these guns anymore, and goes after an FFL? Jim Wallace has said that there are numerous licensing authorities that are not accepting licensing applications. And I'm guessing that is probably going to continue to be a huge issue here going forward, because the state isn't explaining what's going on here. Maybe there is no good explanation, right? Maybe that's why you're getting these, you know, vague and sort of fuzzy guidance, because even the folks who are supposedly making the rules don't know what the rules are.
That's exactly right. They know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this was a horrible bill to roll out. They actually could have taken our bailout, because if we had suspended this law successfully, which we're still getting our signatures, we're still gathering them, that campaign will continue for another week. But if they had said, you know what, we tried our best, but the people have spoken, we let the democratic process take place, we're going to let this bill be suspended till the next 2026 election, then they would have had time to figure it out, to hash it out, to, you know, a lot of this will be ruled unconstitutional in the next 2 years. There's no doubt in my mind. And they could have made adjustments accordingly. Now they look like a tyrant that they are. And the fact that it's a total disaster, all they can do now is say, don't worry, we're not going to prosecute you for breaking our unconstitutional law, and go and continue with the business that you've been doing. That's not good guidance. That's not how laws work. That's not how, like you said, even the licensing authorities and the law enforcement authorities, they're all going to be on different pages on how to implement and how to enforce this. It's mind-numbing.
Well,
the courts are going to suffer.
I mean, you just brought up another, issue here, because one of the changes that Chapter 135 makes is, until now, if you had an FID card, a firearms owner ID card, you could possess a semi-automatic rifle, right, in your home. But now you need a license to carry.
Correct.
So what happens when somebody walks into your shop, Toby, and they want to buy a semi-automatic firearm? Do they have to have a license to carry, or can you sell that gun to them with an FID card?
As of yesterday, there's no way to buy a semi-automatic rifle or shotgun in this state with an FID card. And ironically, they redefined shotguns and rifles to be deemed firearms.
Mm-hmm.
Firearms Identification Card, FID, that's what it stands for, Firearms ID. You can't buy a firearm with a FID card, with a firearm ID card. This is the type of confusion that people are living with. I had a guy come in a couple of weeks ago with an FID card saying he wanted to buy a handgun. I said, I'm sorry, you can't. He goes, well, I don't want to carry it, I just want to buy it. I said, you can't. I'm sorry. That's been the law in this state since, you know, I've been a gun owner since, you know, 1993. And so the truth of the matter is we live in this constant state of confusion. It certainly violates the bright line requirement of where the law is, where you stand in relation to it. And, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's what lawmakers are tasked with, making a bright line requirement so everyone can understand where they are in relation to the law. And we have a constitutionally enumerated right, as you know, and this violates just about every aspect of it. There's no laws that are analogous from the founding era that will support this type of legislation. It will all fall once it's had its day in court eventually. Unfortunately, for the people who live in this state, that might be when it gets to the Supreme Court, which could take 10 years. Who knows how long it's going.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, you're right about that. So what has business been like over the past couple of days at Cape Gun Works?
People are coming in completely confused. Like I said, the welcome to the state of confusion. I had a guy come in today who said, you know, I just looked at the roster that the state released. They simultaneously released a new roster yesterday. They've added three new guns to the roster. But he goes, none of the guns I possess are on that roster. I'm a collector. What do I do? And I'm like, you don't have to do anything. This roster is a list of guns that licensed dealers can sell, but you personally can sell them. You can own them. There's no law that says you can't own your collectible pistols. You just can't go to a licensed gun shop and buy them and get a background check and a 4473 in the process. We can't do that, but you can sell them privately. You can own and collect them. But, you know, that's how totally absurd our laws are in this state. The company or the place where you'd go to get the background check done cannot lawfully sell you a gun unless it's on that roster. And it's just madness. But, you know, I sound like a madman for the last couple of days trying to repeat everything that, you know, has been done and the emerging conditions of it and the lack of actual guidance from the state. You know, this has been purely a political move. 70 days after Maura Healey signed this into law, she felt a need to sign an emergency preamble. The only reason she did it, Cam, is because they knew we were going to be successful in our suspension efforts of getting this law suspended for the next 2 years. That was an act of pure political tyranny. There's probably 100,000 people that have been involved in this process by the time this is all said and done. And she is saying, your voice doesn't matter. I'm going to circumvent, I'm going to short circuit this process so that this law goes into effect immediately, because the alternative of letting the people decide is unthinkable. And that's an act of a tyrant and a dictator.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and I realize those are strong words, but I think they're accurate in this case, yep. You know, because again, what is she doing here? So she signs this emergency preamble. The law goes into effect immediately. Oh, but then they immediately start suspending parts of the law that they're not prepared to deal with, right? Not offering much guidance. They're picking and choosing what parts of this law that needed to be put in place on an emergency basis is actually going to be enforced. You know, and the excuse that she offered yesterday was, well, it took us a couple of months to read through the bill and to, you know, figure out what was going on. And that's why we needed to sign this emergency declaration now. Toby, I mean, not only does she have contempt for gun owners in Massachusetts, I think she's got contempt for every Massachusetts resident. She's treating them like they're morons. Yeah. You know, I mean, if it took 2 months for you to figure out what was in this bill, frankly, that's an argument to delay implementation, not right. to speed it up. But as you say, this came because you guys are getting ready to turn in so many signatures. Do you think, are you pretty confident that you'll have enough signatures that the law would have been suspended if she did not sign this emergency preamble?
100%. There's no question in my mind. We had the signatures necessary to get this law suspended. Like I said, by the end of the week, we anticipate we'll probably be around 85,000 signatures. So, you know, figuring for attrition, I'm sure we're going to have the 49,716 necessary to get the law suspended. They realize that. They've been watching the numbers. Even Michael Day, the architect of this bill, came out and said, we're going to watch and see what they do. Maybe they'll get the signatures. Maybe they won't. I doubt they're going to get it. They literally did not believe that a grassroots effort like this would be formed implemented and executed in the amount of time that we had to do it, to the scale and level that we did it. This is a grassroots effort that is probably one of the best ones and most significant ones in decades in Massachusetts. And Cam, here's something I'm really proud of. We did not have a single paid signature gatherer involved in this process. This was done 100% by volunteers, by the gun owners of Massachusetts, by the good citizens of Massachusetts, by local businesses who donated their time, their money, their effort, their weekends away from family to go to signature sites and gather these. And that's how little the governor thinks of her constituents in this state. She says, I don't care how many signatures you get, what I say goes in this state. She's had a long-standing hatred for gun owners in this state, going all the way back to her as attorney general in 2016. And she then in COVID and now as acting governor. This is a horrible day in Massachusetts where liberty was founded and the tree of liberty was watered with the blood of tyrants and patriots. And unfortunately, here we are 248 years later, and she's trying to finish the work of Thomas Gage and King George III while she sends her troops to go collect the guns from the people. That's really what's at stake here. And there's so many people that need to wake up and get involved. Come sign the petition. It's not over yet. And we're really hoping to finish strong and knock it out of the park here in the next few days and fire for effect with this amount of signatures. But one thing I really hope is that people will see what she's done and hold every single one of these politicians accountable on November 5th. If they have someone running against them, we should be sending them home. We should be sending them to spend more time with the family or pursue other endeavors or whatever else it is they want to go do. But they should not be rewarded with their job back on January, whatever it is, when they're sworn back in. They should be sent home and we should be firing them on November 5th.
You know, let's talk about next steps. I mean, as you say, the signature gathering process is going to continue. You've got to turn them in, I think, to the county election boards, and then it goes to the Secretary of State. Is that how that works?
Correct. Yeah, all the local towns would get be submitted to the town for certification to make sure the person's registered, and then once the town certifies those votes, then we collect them and they get submitted to the Secretary of the Commonwealth by county. And they get to count the votes and say whether or not we had enough. And so, you know, I'm sure that they were checking in with the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office because we've been turning them into towns weekly. And so they know what the count is right now, what we're at. And they realized, hey, they're going to make it. And so she acted. It was a pure political move, had nothing to do with the safety, security, or convenience of the public. This was for the convenience of government. And that's all it was.
Do you, I know that we've already seen, you know, one aspect or one lawsuit filed over one aspect of a Chapter 135, the training requirements that the legislature then quietly went back and amended and said, oh, yeah, we'll push that back 18 months. I think, again, that was just purely to try to, deflect from this lawsuit. If you don't want to tip your plans, I get it, but I will ask. I mean, do you think you could challenge the underlying statute that allowed Governor Healey to sign this emergency preamble and retroactively, change the effective date of this law? Is that something that you guys are looking at doing?
It's definitely something we're exploring. We could look at it. Emergency preambles have been challenged in courts in the past in Massachusetts. They use that catch-all for public convenience as their wide latitude for doing what they're doing. But honestly, I think we can show in court that there are people that are going to be irreparably harmed as a result of this, not only businesses, but people themselves who could be jammed up for being a felon for having done nothing other than, you know, lawfully and legally buying a firearm a couple days ago could now be a felon in the eyes of the state. So I think that we can make that argument. I don't know if it'll be in challenging her emergency preamble or if we just challenge it for a injunctive relief, but we'll see. You know, I'm talking to a lot of different lawyers at the moment, and we'll see how it goes. But obviously those are the next steps, and we'll see which way we end up pursuing.
Well, I do want to thank all of the volunteers who have been, as you say, you know, they've been giving up their time. They've been faced with a lot of opposition at some points. My colleague John Petrolino wrote about what happened at the Big E when the signature gatherers were there, and they basically kicked off the fair property, and then the police were called on them when they were outside the fair property. So, I mean, you guys have been harassed by anti-gun activists. You have been, I think, again, demonized by Governor Healey. And I do want to single you out specifically, Toby, because you have been everywhere in the media the past couple of days. And I've noticed a change in how this story is being reported. A couple of months ago, the Boston-based media in particular was doing a terrible job of explaining all of the pitfalls and the hidden hand grenades in Chapter 135. But I think I've seen a shift over the past couple of weeks where even the Boston media is now reporting your concerns and the concerns of gun owners. And they're not just relying on people like Michael Day to provide, you know, the information and background on what's going on. So I don't know how much sleep you're getting these days, but your efforts really are, I think, having an impact. And not just in terms of this referendum, but also in terms of educating the public about what's going on here. So thank you for everything that you're doing sincerely, because you and other gun owners, I mean, and for gun owners outside of Massachusetts, listen, this fight doesn't stop there. Right. You know, they're going to try to export everything they've done in Massachusetts to the places where you live. So we need to stand with Second Amendment supporters like Toby now, which brings me to what can we do? What can outsiders do to help you guys right now?
Well, that's a great question. And I appreciate that, Cam, and everything you said. And I agree with you. I've seen a change in some of the reporting, which is really good. Hopefully that trend continues and they start to truly report of the implications of this bill instead of the stupid headlines that they're trying to get emotional buy-in from people who are not really paying attention. But you can go to thecivilrightscoalition.com and there's a donate link. You can also print out the petition if you are in your home now. You can do that if you're a Mass resident voter. You can also sign up to volunteer. This effort is going to continue. And but you, more importantly, we definitely need people to donate, because this is about to get expensive. You can also donate to GOAL. Gun Owners Action League has some litigation efforts they're going to be doing. All the national groups are looking at this state right now, figuring out how to best jump in and make the biggest impact. So now more than ever, join all the groups and, you know, support those who are actually fighting the fight, because this is something, you know, it's easy to just move, right? To go to a free state. I could just move to New Hampshire tomorrow. We could open another business there. It would be successful. That's the easy way out. But this disease spreads. Everybody's looking at Massachusetts right now saying, what's going to happen? And if we don't stop it here, then it will spread. It's already spreading to Maine. It's already going to spread to Vermont. Vermont was the first constitutional carry state in the country, had no gun laws when I first got my license to carry, other than you couldn't own a suppressor. Now they have all kinds of restrictions. So the free state, this is going to spread like a bad disease and a cancer if we don't stop it where the fight is. And I think about our founding fathers who, when the Redcoats did come to Lexington and Concord, they didn't say, hey, maybe we got to go to Pennsylvania. These guys aren't around there. They stood and they fought. And that's what we need to do. This is our generation's, you know, Lexington and Concord, if you ask me. And we need to stand on that North Bridge and draw a line in the sand and say, not one more inch. It is not the problem of licensed, lawful gun owners. It is the fact that you have created policies that foments and prospers criminals on the street, and you throw out their gun charges so that they don't have to go to jail. That's madness. And then all the while you're laying the blame at the feet of the most peaceful segment of society, the lawful gun owners in Massachusetts. And that's where the fight is right now. We're at this turning point in our history, and 248 years after the greatest country on earth was formed, we need to redig some wells in those areas, and we need to revisit that and tell the tyrants, no, you're not going to finish the work of King George III. We're going to stand for the right to keep and bear arms and all the other enumerated rights as well. And that's what we got to do. It's our generation's turn. It's our time to shine. No one's coming to save us. So if we don't do it, then who will? And I think that's the most important issue we're facing right now.
Absolutely. Well, Toby, listen, man, again, I really do appreciate you carving out a few minutes today. We'll be definitely staying in touch. We're going to be focused a lot on what's going on in Massachusetts. So love to have you back on the show in a week or two just to get an update and see what's going on. But thecivilrightscoalition.com, is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Or, that's the website.
Or fightbackma.org. Either one will get you where you need to be.
All right. Toby Leary, thank you again for everything you do, man. I really appreciate it. And thanks for showing up on Cam and Company today.
Anytime. Thank you. Take care.
Well, thanks again to Toby for joining us on the program. This is truly unbelievable. How are folks supposed to know what the law is if the state of Massachusetts is quite literally making it up as they go along right now? Right? Oh, we got to put this in place now. It's an emergency. Oh, except for that provision over there and that provision over there and maybe that provision over there. And we're not going to say anything about that provision until somebody brings it up. This is insane. But again, this is par for the course throughout the process of what is now Chapter 135, right? From the very get-go, this has been just an absolute abomination from the beginning of the legislative process up to now, and the contempt again on display for gun owners and our inherent right to keep and bear arms. It's absolutely disgusting. All right. We will continue following what's going on in Massachusetts. And as I said, and as Toby said, if you can support what they're doing up there, please do, because it is critically important, not just to Massachusetts gun owners, but to gun owners all around the country. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen Story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Illinois where a resident now of California has received probation for a shooting back in January in the town of Rantoul. Yeah, you know, Illinois, again, all kinds of new laws aimed at you and me and other legal gun owners, right? But if you are, you know, accused of committing a violent crime, don't worry about it. Just a little bit of probation for you. 20-year-old Dylan Cassander pleaded guilty on Tuesday this week to aggravated discharge of a firearm. In exchange, the state of Illinois, or the state's attorney in Champaign County, dropped one count of possession of a firearm without a valid firearm owner's identification card, which is a Class A misdemeanor. While Cassander pleaded guilty to a felony charge, he did not get any prison time. Champaign County Judge Matt Lee accepted the recommendation of both the defense and the state's attorney in Champaign County that Cassander should spend 4 years on probation for shooting at an occupied car back in January. Police got a call on January 26th around 7:45 on reports of a shooting there in Rantoul. When they got there, they were able to obtain surveillance footage from a nearby garage that showed a man standing outside of a home when a car slowly drove by. That man, later identified as Cassander, appeared to speak with the occupants of the vehicle, and then he fired several rounds towards the car. No one was hit, but officers did locate 8 shell casings in the front yard. Cassander turned himself in to Rantoul police the next day. He was later released on pretrial conditions. If he had been convicted at trial, he faced between 4 to 15 years in prison for aggravated discharge of a firearm. But again, the state's attorneys did not object to him getting probation. In fact, they agreed to it. They also did not object to Cassander transferring his probation case to California, where he now lives. The judge did tell Cassander that he is getting, quote, a lenient deal. Yeah, no kidding, right? And he said, based on what you did, you're very fortunate that this is the sentence that you're getting today. And I'm only doing this because the states agreed to do this sentence. And that's probably most likely because you were cooperative and you've got no criminal history. Okay, no criminal history before now. Cooperated with investigators, sure. But, you know, there are some parts of the state where you can be arrested and charged simply for possessing a firearm without a valid FOID card or possessing a firearm without a concealed carry license. And you're not going to get this kind of deal. The state's not going to go along with it, right? For the crime of bearing arms without a government-issued permission slip. So, yeah, the state may have agreed to this probationary sentence, and hopefully Mr. Cassander does stay out of trouble. But when the state is routinely giving violent offenders probation while putting more criminal penalties in place for people who are trying to lawfully exercise their right to keep and bear arms, there's a problem. And Illinois has plenty of them. All right, today's armed citizen story from Camden County, Missouri, where a burglary ended with a suspect shot. This was, I believe, early Wednesday morning. Police were called out to a home in Camden County. It was around 3 a.m. on October the 2nd for a burglary in progress. The 911 caller told dispatchers that they had shot one of the burglars while another managed to escape in a dark-colored vehicle. Camden County Sergeant Scott Hines says they also told us that one of the subjects got to a dark-colored vehicle, no make or model, then drove off. By the time our deputies got there, the subject was deceased. Sergeant Hines says that the estate's castle doctrine may come into effect here. He says essentially what the castle doctrine says is that if you're in fear for your life, you do have the right to protect yourself. He went on to say, I'll let the attorneys get into the weeds on that, but that's the long and short of it. And in this situation, I think that's what we're going to find. So don't have, again, a lot of details about this, but multiple burglars. One of them fatally shot, the other taking off in Camden County, Missouri, and the homeowner not facing any charges because authorities believe he was acting in self-defense. Unharmed homeowner, I should add, by the way. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A police officer in the state of Texas who was able to save an infant choking on a piece of plastic. Now, this happened back in late August. But the officer in question just recognized by the Spring Branch Independent School District a couple of days ago. Officer Juan Pedraza said he relied on his training and instincts to rescue this baby boy, approximately 9 months old, choking on a piece of plastic outside of Cedarbrook Elementary School on August the 30th. It was in the evening. Not sure if there was like some sort of school function or why there were people there. But Pedraza was in the right place at the right time and able to do the right thing. The Spring Branch Independent School District Police Chief Larry Bainbridge said it's not his favorite sound in the world, but when you hear a baby crying after choking, that's a very good thing. He said you don't get a chance to call timeout. You don't get a chance to get on your phone and say, what do I do? The baby's choking. You better know beforehand and you better take action right away because every single second counts. And Pedraza was in the right place at the right time, had the training and the cool-headedness to help save that nine-month-old from choking on a piece of plastic, saving a life. And again, just a heroic deed. I'm glad to see that he's being recognized for that. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again next Monday. But don't forget to check out Bearing Arms throughout the day, today, Friday, and over the weekend. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, whether it's litigation, legislation, regulation, the culture war attacks on our right to keep and bear arms. We're covering it all for you, Bearing Arms. And we certainly do appreciate your support. If you want to become a VIP or VIP Gold member, that's a great time to do so. Just use the promo code SAVEAMERICA and you can get a significant savings on your membership. You'll get exclusive stories. You'll get an ad-free experience, ability to comment on all of our posts. But you will also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And your support is vitally needed these days with rampant media bias, big tech censorship. And we've got a lot of challenges, but you can help us bring the truth to gun owners all across the country. So thank you again for your support. Look forward to seeing you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.